This podcast is presented with support from Undercurrents, American Music with a Passport, streaming online at undercurrentsradio.net.
Hi, I'm Mark Sommer, host of A World of Possibilities. Today on our minicast, Carl Honoré, author of In Praise of Slowness. He was cruising the fast lane when he collided with the realization that he was racing past all that really matters, heading who knows where and to what end. A recent convert to slow-mo, Carl isn't doctrinaire about his personal discovery. He grants that increasing speed in transportation, production, and the exchange of information have brought great benefits to humanity. But he believes they've also extracted a price in our relations with nature, one another, and ourselves, a price that's rising by the nanosecond. To learn more, we reached Carl at his office in London. I asked him what prompted him to slow the pace of his own life.
For me, the wake-up call came when I started reading bedtime stories to my son. And I used to find that I'd go into his bedroom at the end of the day and I just could not slow down. So I'd be sitting on the bed with one foot on the floor, speed reading Snow White, you know, jumping paragraphs and sometimes whole pages. And these tricks to speed things up never really work with kids because, of course, my son knew the books inside out. And so he'd catch me out and he'd say, you know, Daddy, why are there only three dwarves in the story tonight? You know, what happened to Grumpy? And so we were constantly at loggerheads. And I knew from my own folk memory of being read to by my parents, but this should have been the most relaxed, the most intimate, the most tender, the most magical moment of the day when a father sits down to read a story to his little boy. But in our house, it had become a battle of wills. It was a war between my speed and his slowness. And this went on for some time until I caught myself charging at full speed through an airport departure lounge, speed reading a newspaper article with time-saving tips with fast people like me to go even faster. And one of these tips talked about a series of books called The 1 Minute Bedtime Story, or, you know, Snow White in 60 Seconds. And I remember reading those words and thinking to myself, you know, hallelujah, what a great idea. I am going to get the whole set FedEx tomorrow from Amazon, you know, express delivery. But thankfully, I had a second reaction, and it's like when you're in the cartoons and the light bulb appears over your head, and I suddenly thought, whoa, you know, has it really come to this? Am I really in such a hurry that I'm prepared to fob off my son with a soundbite at the end of the day? And that was the wake-up moment for me. That was the turning point. That's when I suddenly realized that I'd just lost my bearings and I wanted to make sense not only of my own speedaholism, but I wanted to pick apart and try and understand this general roadrunner culture that seems to have become the norm across the world. And that was the starting point for writing the book.
You know, it's funny you mention that. My daughter, actually, having a child late in life at age 48, that forced me to slow down, actually, because all of my work had to come to a stop and I became the house husband. And you know the way a small child is, they don't work in a world of time or appointments, and they command your attention. So I found that what I did was to surrender to her world, and that was a world of a kind of timeless zone that was incredibly relaxing. Did you allow yourself that time with your child or children?
Well, I think back then, when I was stuck in fast forward, I didn't, but I do now. And you've put your finger on something very central here, which is that magic that children are born with, that remarkable capacity to disappear into a moment. Children are not born with any conception of what we understand to be time or the digital clock. We inculcate those values in them in school through the primary years and so on. They have their own tempo and their own rhythm, and they expect us to fall into that and to move in lockstep with them. And when we don't, that's when things start to go wrong. And certainly one of the great gifts, I think, if we allow ourselves to be open to it, that children bring, is that other register, that other way of moving through time, that way of stepping out of time in a way and just being there, present in the moment and fully engaged with whatever you're doing or thinking or consuming or eating or making, rather than racing through every moment with one eye on the clock and the other eye on your inbox.
It's interesting, too. I remember Ram Dass, otherwise known as Richard Alpert, formerly of LSD fame, but in his later years, he got into the notion, in fact, he wrote a book called Be Here Now, which became something of a mantra for spiritual pilgrims in the 1970s. And we were all using various kinds of techniques, including meditation, to try to move out of both future and past and just live now. And it's amazingly difficult to do that. And I remember sitting in what's called Zazen, which is Zen meditation, most painfully sitting there in full lotus with my knees just cracking apart moment after moment and breaking through the impulse to stand up and run away and be distracted. And I recall reaching a point where I broke through. This was after 5 days or so of almost constant meditation, and where the resistance ended and I entered into the present moment with no other thoughts. And it was the most spacious place and time I've ever known. Have you experienced that sort of thing, whether in meditation or any other way?
I've had the same experience, and I went through the same uncomfortable and even painful transition that you've just described. I write about this in the book, where I went to a meditation retreat, and for the first 3 days, it was just agony trying to step out of roadrunner mode and be still, to disconnect completely and slow down. But as you've described it, if you stay with it, if you have the patience and the strength to hold on and to come out the other end, the place you come out is remarkable. I mean, it is a place of immense stillness and space and possibility. And it's something you hear, and we've heard, you know, for hundreds of years from people who practice meditation or move in cultures or religions that embrace that way of thinking. But it's a lesson, it seems to me, that in the 21st century we've forgotten, that we've just jettisoned as we've moved into this crazed frenzy of multitasking, where to be still, to be unplugged, to be quiet, to be slow, is almost seen as countercultural. It's seen as failure. It's seen as surrender. It's seen as heresy. And I think there's a basic human need for that change of gears, to be in that slow space, that place of quiet and stillness. And because so many people are denied it, I think that's one reason why there's such a strong feeling of existential malaise, but also health problems and troubles with relationships. I mean, we've tried to accelerate absolutely everything, from not only the way we work in the workplace, but even our personal relationships. I mean, people have 922 friends on Facebook, but when was the last time they actually spent a whole afternoon chatting with one of them in the park? So we end up in this curious worshiping of all things fast, and we seem to have swallowed the idea that faster is always better, when manifestly that's untrue. And I think that's why this whole slow culture quake has really caught the imagination and has spread so far and wide so quickly, ironically, that the slow revolution is growing fast is not surprising, because I think it speaks to a very profound and timeless human need, and that is the need to step off the turbocharged carousel and to find those other rhythms and those other tempos.
When you wrote that book, it seems to me that was around the time the slow food movement began in Italy. Tell us a little bit about the genesis of slow food and how it spread into, I don't know, slow sex and everything else.
Well, slow food emerged at the end of the 1980s. The spark was the arrival of McDonald's on the Spanish Steps in Rome, and to a lot of Italian gourmands, this was just a branch too far, and so they decided they had to do something about it. And so they set up slow food as a counterpoint to fast food, the idea being that slow food represents everything that fast food does not. It's about food that is cultivated and cooked and consumed at a slower pace, and it's about, you know, the art of eating well, and also how we farm the land and look after animals and so on. So it's not just about sitting around, you know, tables with white tablecloths and eating foie gras. It's much more less elitist and much more open than that. But the essential idea is that faster is not always better, and getting away from this idea of accelerating everything around food. And I would say that slow food, what it did was it recaptured and took back the word slow, because slow in our, particularly Western culture, has for a long time been a dirty word. It's a four-letter word. It's a byword for lazy and torpid and unproductive and Luddite and backward and all the things that nobody wants to be. And what slow food did, I think, was to say, okay, we are slow and we're proud of it, that slow is a good thing, and that slowness has a role to play in the 21st century, that slowness can be a virtue. And so what happened through the 90s, especially the late 90s, was that this notion of slower can be better, or that faster isn't always better, began to trickle out of the food sphere and attach itself to everything that we do. And I guess my book came along and said, became in a way the sort of manual for taking that very simple idea that slower can be better, that faster isn't always the best policy, and applied it and investigated how it could be applied in every sphere of life. So since slow food began gathering momentum through the early 90s and up to today, we've seen an explosion of other slow movements. So there are now slow movements for, you know, slow medicine, slow manufacturing, slow sex, slow parenting, slow education, slow design. Slow travel is huge in the tourism industry. Slow cities, you know, whatever you do, the idea, that very simple idea of slow, which is to do things at the right speed, that sometimes there are moments to be fast, sometimes there are moments to be slow. What musicians call the tempo giusto, the idea that every piece of music has a natural rhythm to it, a natural tempo, and if you can get as close as possible to that correct speed, that right tempo, then you will do whatever it is you're doing better and enjoy it more. And once you have that idea of doing everything not as fast as possible but as well as possible, you realize that it can apply to everything that you do. So the slow culture quake has really gathered extraordinary momentum over the last few years. And from a personal point of view, I'm just blown away by it. When I published my book, when it first came out, I thought that I would just be eviscerated, particularly by the business community. But the opposite was true, that it seemed to me that the book came along at just the right moment, where people were feeling that they were racing through their lives instead of actually living them. And there was a real sense that we had lost our compass as a culture, and that we had moved away from something very simple and essential, which was that idea of doing things well rather than doing them fast. And so I think the book came along at the right time, and the tectonic plates have been shifting below the surface for some time anyway, and I think we've just been moving closer and closer and with more and more conviction towards a slow world. I mean, we still have a long way to go. The slow revolution will be slow. It's not going to happen, you know, tomorrow morning or next year. But I've just seen some remarkable shifts in the last, especially with the credit crunch. I think that's focused minds as well. It seems to me that we're moving much more towards a consensus around the idea that slower can often be better.
Carl Honoré, author of In Praise of Slowness. I'm Mark Summer, inviting you to hear the full one-hour program on your local public radio station, or online at aworldofpossibilities.org. This podcast was made possible with support from the Ford Foundation and undercurrentsradio.net.